This is Lori Grenier. You've seen me on Shark Tank. I'm always hearing from business owners who just can't get the money they need to grow. It's time for funding to catch up to the 21st century. It's time for Cabbage. Fill out the application online and you'll get a decision in minutes and could have access to a line of credit of up to $100,000. No waiting, no hassle. Cabbage is the real deal, A-plus rated by the Better Business Bureau and twice a Forbes Top 100 company. So go to cabbage.com. That's Cabbage with a K, K-A-B-B-A-G-E, or call 888-CABBAGE.
This is Greta Talk, and it's not on the record at 7 p.m., which, of course, you all watch Monday through Friday at 7 p.m. Eastern, but this is Greta Talk. And I have a very, very, very special guest, probably one of the best women lawyers in the country. She's tough. I've locked horns with her on occasion, and I've survived, but she's certainly, you want advocate, you want this lawyer. This is Gloria Allred joins you. Nice to talk to you, Gloria.
You too, Greta. Thank you.
Gloria, you're always so tough. You're a strong advocate for your client. In fact, you've driven me nuts because I can never get any information out of you or get anything from you.
Until it's the right time for my client.
No, I know that. And I say it, I'm actually saying it as a compliment to you because you're a real lawyer's lawyer.
Thank you very much. Yeah, my first duty is to my client to protect them, to make sure that any statements are accurate, and to help them to achieve their goals. So thank you for that. And I know you were an outstanding attorney in private practice before you became this very high-profile and successful television host. So I know you understand that.
Well, indeed I do. Although it never stops you from trying to get information out of you, but
That's true. That's your job.
Yeah, you work us over pretty hard. Okay, so I want to talk to you about O.J. Simpson case. Where were you when you first heard that Nicole Brown Simpson had been murdered?
Well, I was. I actually heard it on the news. I had, in fact, attended a beautiful black tie event at the Beverly Hills home of Diane and Bill Ellis. I think the night before this occurred, before the actual killing of Nicole Brown Simpson and Ronald Goldman, may they rest in peace, occurred. I was at a black tie event, and one of the guests there was O.J. Simpson. He was there with Paula Barberi, who was his woman friend at the time, and I saw him there. Somebody asked if I wanted to meet him. Usually I am interested in meeting new people. I just wasn't interested in meeting him for some reason. I didn't think we had much in common. And he was seated at a table right behind me, and I kept turning around to look at him, trying to figure out why I'd reacted the way I had, because it wasn't like me at all. And then on a Monday morning, actually that was a Saturday night, on Monday morning I got a call from CNN that Nicole had been brutally murdered on June 12th, and that's how I found out about it. CNN wanted me to comment. I said no thank you, but I didn't feel that enough facts were known for me to comment at that time. But I'm glad I didn't, because ultimately I received a call from the Nicole Brown family, and at that point I began to represent them, and did represent them during the criminal case, and I was happy to be able to make statements as more facts came in.
You know, it turned all of our lives upside down. I mean, and most of all, of course, for the Brown family and the Goldman family. My heart always bled for them. It's like that those poor family, one day everything's fine, and then the next day things aren't so fine.
Well, yes, and my heart still goes out to them. Obviously, they have suffered a tremendous loss. But things were not always good with Nicole and O.J. Simpson, as we all know. For example, we learned during the course of the criminal case that where he was being tried for murder, that in 1989, Nicole had been attacked by Simpson, and that Mr. Simpson had pled no contest, of course, tantamount to a guilty plea, to the spousal battery charges filed against him, but he never received any jail time. And that, was very critical about as the case proceeded. It turns out that the L.A. city attorney at the time had recommended that Simpson not be sentenced to jail. And that the judge said he simply followed that suggestion. And I was very critical of that failure to sentence him to jail because, of course, we all saw the photos later of Nicole with her eye black and blue, and understood the battery that had been committed and inflicted on her.
But, you know, and I don't mean to inflict punishment upon the family, but the family was also well aware of that, and yet they all fully embraced O.J. Simpson after that. I mean, it's like there was no secret that he had beaten her, but they, you know, everybody in the family, you know, was still embracing him in many ways.
Well, you know, I don't want to blame the family. They're not.
I don't mean that. I'm not blaming them either.
I know you're not, but I'm just saying, where, you know, Nicole also had children. Children were nieces, a niece, a nephew, grandchildren. That, you know, they were family, and it's a very complicated situation. There are no easy answers, as we all know, when there's a battery in the family and people are trying to keep the family together. And so, you know, I prefer to focus on, you know, the victim and the fact that the criminal justice system did not do what it should have done in case of the battery. Because, you know, even if a city attorney recommends that Mr. Simpson not be sentenced to jail, you know, a judge is obligated to hand down the appropriate sentence to fit a crime. And if a judge's only function is to rubber stamp the city attorney's recommendation, I guess we could eliminate all judges for sentencing.
Yeah, on the other,
the city attorney enter the sentence.
On the other hand, maybe the judge, this is true of all these domestic violence cases, are so difficult for so many reasons, but maybe the judge was hoping that the family would somehow, you know, make it through this and get through this, and that maybe jail, maybe I assume the judge wasn't just rubber stamping, but was sort of taking the recommendation, thinking the prosecutor is more informed of what was going on, and that the family would somehow, you know, make this turn around.
Well, you know, as I say in my book, Fight Back and Win, my 30-year fight against injustice, which came out in 2006, judges can, they should, and they often do reject prosecutors' recommendations for sentencing and impose different sentences in appropriate cases. And I think that the plea, and well, the sentence on that spousal battery charge should have resulted in serious consequences. And the minimal sentence that was imposed on Simpson, $500 counseling and charity work, obviously didn't accomplish any of the purposes of the criminal justice system, which and sentencing, which is rehabilitation, punishment, deterrence, and the protection of the victim. That sentence, I think, was an insult to battered women. It sent the wrong message to men who batter their wives. And, I mean, Nicole was doing everything she could do to contain Mr. Simpson's abuse. She moved out. She consulted battered women's shelters. She divorced Simpson. She sought therapy. She documented her injuries. She called 911. Still, Simpson killed her. So I think this all demonstrates that, and her death demonstrates that when domestic abuse isn't taken seriously, the violence often escalates until the victim ends up dead. And it's a system that failed to shield her and still does fail to shield sometimes other women from deadly domestic violence.
You know, I totally agree he should have gotten the maximum with 20/20 hindsight. I mean, you'd have to be a fool or very cold and what not to think that he should have gotten the maximum for the battery, for the domestic violence, and maybe it would have been a completely different story for everyone, for Nicole and the family. But the problem, as I recall, always with domestic violence cases is that, when, you know, oftentimes the police go out and they arrest somebody for domestic violence, and the victim, which is mostly women, although actually I once had a case where the victim was a man. He'd been bitten all over his face, of all things, by the woman. But anyway, is that by the time the case rolls around for trial, the victim suddenly doesn't want to show up, and then there's a huge problem.
Well, I don't know that that was the case here.
I wasn't suggesting that. I was just saying in general that some of the profound difficulties with all these domestic violence cases.
Yeah, but at the same time, we know that often, if a dog is beaten, which nobody should beat an animal, of course, nor a woman, that often the perpetrators are sentenced to prison. But if they beat a woman, they get probation. Now, there is no way to justify that.
None. Absolutely none. I totally agree.
And that is the state of affairs. As you know, I've been practicing for 40 years. And we're the leading women's rights law firm in the country, and I can just tell you that not much has improved, except maybe there's an improvement in the lip service that is afforded to cases involving battered women. But in terms of the sentencing, it's still inadequate for today, because it just doesn't help to protect women, and it allows the perpetrators of violence against women not to suffer the serious consequences they should, and that sends them a message that maybe it's okay to do it again.
Okay. What do you think of Judge Ito? How'd he do?
I think he deserves some criticism. I don't think he should have been meeting in his chambers as reported with certain celebrities. I think that presented the wrong image of, in certain cases, it just appeared that, that he wasn't being as professional as we expect a judge to be. I think he definitely had his hands full trying to control very, very assertive defense attorneys, assertive prosecutors, and they all needed to be assertive. But still, I just think, there were real question marks about his demeanor in the courtroom. And I think that probably led to his failure to be able to be elevated to a court of appeals later on, because I think there was some criticism of that. I think it could have been handled differently.
Why was the verdict not guilty?
Oh, that is a great question, a really complicated question. I think that there definitely was more than sufficient evidence by which they could have found him guilty. And that is beyond question. And in fact, later a civil jury did find not that he was guilty, because that's what is the finding in a criminal case, guilty or be acquitted. But in a civil case, they did find that Mr. Simpson, in fact, was liable by preponderance of the evidence, was liable, and actually by, I think, clear and convincing evidence as well, which is more than a preponderance, for the deaths of Nicole Brown and Ron Goldman. What went into the jury's mind? I think that the prosecutors obviously didn't satisfy their burden in the minds of the jury. It was a shocking verdict, because
you were shocked?
many people felt that there was beyond a reasonable doubt burden was met. But, in that case, Greta, as you know, there was more evidence presented, the blood evidence, other evidence, than in most cases.
It did. After the verdict, what did you say to I realize you weren't the prosecutor, you weren't the defense attorney, but what did you say to the Browns after the verdict? I mean, how did you explain it to them?
I unfortunately, because of attorney-client privilege of confidentiality, I can't say what I said to them. I will say that we immediately went from the courtroom up to meet with the district attorney about the result.
How was the district attorney? Who was that, with Gil Garcetti or with Marcia Clark at that point?
No, with Mr. Garcetti.
You can say what he said. How was he about the verdict?
I think he was, I don't remember exactly what he said, but clearly he was disappointed. But, I really feel that if this case had been tried as a death penalty case, we would have possibly seen a very different result. But it wasn't. He decided not to seek the death penalty. And, in fact, he took a step that is very unusual. He decided to meet with representatives of the African-American community about the Simpson case, the murder case. He met with John Mack, the president of the Urban League. He held a press conference, Mack did, to say that Mr. Garcetti had been asked not to seek the death penalty against Simpson. I found out later, as I say in my book, that Johnny Cochran was also at the meeting, although at the time he said he wasn't representing O.J. Simpson. I didn't think it was appropriate for the DA to be meeting with members of the community to determine whether or not to seek the death penalty in a particular case. It's really a legal decision. It shouldn't be a political decision. But since he had decided to meet with those who opposed it, I thought it was only fair that he meet with those of us who thought he should seek the death penalty. I was one of them. But he did not meet with battered women's advocates. He did not meet with me. He declined to do that. I thought there were precedents for Mr. Garcetti to decide to seek the death penalty. He had asked for and obtained the death penalty against two wives who were prosecuted for killing their husbands. And I had to ask, did Garcetti consider a man's life to be more valuable than that of a woman? And I felt that if he didn't apply the death penalty decision equally, his actions could be interpreted as discrimination against female spouse victims, particularly battered women. But, the jury is the conscience of the community. Then I think it was the jury that should have had and been permitted to make the ultimate decision of whether or not to recommend the death penalty for Simpson. Look, the bottom line is we know that if a death penalty is sought, then that affects the jury pool. It affects those who may be selected for the jury because he may end up getting more law and order oriented jurors who would say that they could apply the death penalty in appropriate circumstances. It affected who would be on the jury, and I thought his decision not to seek it just reflected a conscious and callous disregard for the lives of Nicole and Ron, and maybe that led to the acquittal.
Do you think television coverage had anything to do with the verdict?
Allegedly, the jurors who were sequestered were not supposed to be watching television. Whether, in fact, they were exposed to television coverage and other press coverage, I really can't say, but I think it's clear that the jurors would understand that this was the highest profile criminal case in the country. I'm not sure if they were aware of polls that appeared to indicate that the majority of television viewers at the time thought that Mr. Simpson should be convicted. If they were aware of that, they disregarded it. Obviously, their mandate is to decide the case based only on the evidence that is admitted in the courtroom. But I can't say beyond a reasonable doubt that they weren't affected by television coverage of this. I don't know.
Let me switch topics. Just a couple quick questions. Everybody knows you, Gloria. You're one of the most famous lawyers in the country. If you hadn't gone to law school and become a lawyer, so do you look back? I mean, what would you otherwise like to do?
Well, I actually, Greta, was a teacher in high schools, in public high schools in Philadelphia and also in Los Angeles for 6.5 years. I'm a credentialed secondary school teacher. I also
are you a tough grader?
To be a principal. Pardon me?
Are you a tough grader?
I was a pretty tough teacher. And
I bet
you were. I was
teaching
in very tough schools, I might add. In Philadelphia, I taught in an all-boys high school, all-boys, all-African-American high school. I was one of the first women teachers. When I wasn't teaching English, I was on patrol in the recreation room with 3,000 young men and myself. I might add, we got along very well because I grew up poor. They came from poor homes. I understood they just wanted a really good education, and that was my job, is to help them to learn. And I had very positive experience there. Then I moved to California, asked if I could teach in Watts. It was 1 year after the Watts riots or rebellion, and there was white flight out of the schools, and they said, yes, how soon can you come? So I got a job teaching high school in Watts, and I really loved the experience and had very positive experience with my students there as well. So, yes, that's what I would have been doing, was doing, and would continue to do if I were not a lawyer. I just love teaching.
And we've been talking to Gloria Allred, one of the most famous lawyers in the country who's got every high-profile case. And, Gloria, I didn't ask you about the case now that you have against Bill Cosby. I hope you come back and talk about that sometime. But I did want to talk to you just about anytime you want to come back. When you come east, I'll buy you dinner, too. Will you come east sometime?
I would love that.
That'd be fun. So, Gloria Allred, thank you very much for talking to us. And note to all the listeners. We're always adding to the Greta Talk collection. Get the latest ones or catch up on Greta Talk sessions you've missed at GretaWire.com/podcast and GretaTalk.com. And we're also available on iTunes, TuneIn, and Stitcher. And, of course, watch On the Record on the Fox News Channel at 7 p.m. Eastern, Monday through Friday.